Welcome to Brom's show. Brom's not here today. He's been abducted by aliens, and so he's going to be gone for this episode, and we swiped his login information, and we're setting up the podcast today. I will be one of your hosts, Brian Butka, from the Just a Thinker podcast, and co-hosting and really guiding me, because I'm a rookie, is Patrick Bass. Patrick has done real podcasts with more than the two listeners I have and is a longtime friend. Patrick, thank you for bailing me out and helping me figure this stuff out.
Hey, Brian, it's good to be here. And let me just say, I think you have more than two listeners because you have at least two from my house. So,
awesome.
But it's just such a joy to reconnect with you and to be on this podcast. I have not yet met Brom. I'm hoping to do so at some future point. But in any event, I'm just happy to be here with you today. And I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Super. Me too. And I think the timing is really great because you just released a book, The Modern Gentleman, A Guide to Essential Manhood. And I am getting ready to dig into it. You've shared a bunch of the content with me in advance. And it was really great just to see the topics you were addressing that I think are really vital. And perhaps in line with what Brom's been doing, looking at Proverbs, he's in chapter one. We'll skip ahead to chapter 13, but I believe it's 13:22. Says, a good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. It goes on to say that the wealth of the sinner is stored up for the hands of the righteous, using the Amplified. But one of the things that made me think about is planning for the third generation, right? Planning not just for our children, but for our grandchildren and beyond. And again, it just makes me think that there's wisdom in there in planning well beyond our immediate needs and those of our children, but our grandchildren, which certainly is a different approach. And I actually heard another podcast host just mentioning just that mindset shift from that immediate need to teaching, planning internally in our homes for that third generation, teaching our children the same, that with the writing of your book, you're talking about modern manhood, what does it mean to be a man? And you cover a wide range of topics. So I thought this would be really great to discuss together, get your thoughts on this and see how we can work through this together in light of how manhood has changed, at least in modern times, or what appears to have changed and probably shouldn't have.
Well, I wrote that book, and I'll talk about that just for a moment. But I wrote that book because, when I look at, I used to tell my wife, I look at my grandparents, for example, World War II, the greatest generation, and then I would look at, people who are, in their 20s now. And I thought, painting with broad strokes, grand generalizations, how could we go from the greatest generation to this, And I felt like it was my responsibility, just as someone who has made a lot of mistakes in life, to be able and also to kind of give back for all the wonderful help I've gotten along the way, to kind of create a guidebook. It's like the owner's manual every man should have gotten when they were born, or certainly before they reached puberty. But I also wanted to write it with a Christian worldview because there is so much confusion out there and disinformation and things that are just flat wrong. And frankly, there's not a lot of, you can find a lot of books on Amazon about being a gentleman and manners and things like that, but not a lot of them written are actually none that I could find that were written with a Christian worldview. And that's why I wanted to write that book. At least young men could say no one has ever told us.
Right. Well, I think the two go hand in hand. Again, being a bit of a podcast junkie myself, Rabbi Daniel Lappin talks about the scripture being ancient Jewish wisdom and how it explains how the world really works. And even for someone who's not a believer, the wisdom of scripture is vital. It really does tell us how the world really works. And as a believer, that's even more important, right? Scriptures are our true north, right? We know this to be true. And having someone say, here, I'm pulled out these things, especially for Americans, you know, Westerners, modern times, trying to live out what does it mean to be a real man, not just male. Scripture is integral to it, and you're right. As believers, I think we often, as Christians especially, we're probably not as good as our Jewish brethren at being very intentional in how we transmit wisdom through the generations. Now, for me, that could just be a reflection that I grew up with not my father in the house, but various stepfathers, right? So there wasn't consistency there. Maybe that's just me, but I don't think, you know, correct me if I seem off, I don't think as a culture, as believers, we are real as intentional as we should be. Again, that's the reason for your book, right? How can we be intentional in teaching this wisdom on what it's like to be a man and helping those next generation of men do the same?
Yeah, and you know, the scripture that you brought up, Proverbs 13:22, I think really talks about and it underscores a responsibility that Christians have, and men in particular, right, since we're supposed to be the you know, the leaders of our house, that we have an intergenerational responsibility, a duty, if you will, to think beyond our own lifetime. And so, you know, there's this thought of planning for our children's children. And I think that goes something far beyond financial stability and enters, you know, an ethical dimension. Right. Something that certainly could include wealth, but I think in a grander sense, and I think this would be even more valuable than money, setting a standard of moral conduct and responsibility.
Agreed, right? That character, ultimately, right? Our character, our moral conduct. Our son, Courtney's and my son, Brendan, is 17. He's getting ready to graduate. And at least one of the things I've hoped, at least in my mind, I've tried to talk about. I hope it didn't happen just in my mind, but explain to him, because he's more capable intellectually than I was at his age. His math skills are fantastic. Mine were terrible. So he's got the intellectual capacity. And we would often talk about how the most important thing as parents we can pour into you, son, is to help your character development, right? That the character, to instilling character in our sons and daughters, but especially our sons, is vital, and trying to make sure he's connected to the word, to the Lord himself, not just, right, it's his parents' faith that he's hanging on to. And then, yes, and I know I have to get better at, this is where I thought it'd be great for discussion, is, right, what would that look like? What are some ways it would look like to think, are we teaching not only our immediate children, but how to prepare and put in a mindset that is multiple generations, right? Because I can appreciate that's distinctly different than me just trying to get Brendan ready to go out and be a dad, but how is he being prepared to be a grandfather, right?
Right. And I think what you're alluding to really is just to what extent are we as men modeling behavior that we want to pass on to our children and our grandchildren? I think that's one of the most potent ways we have to influence the character of the next generation is by modeling behaviors that we want them to exhibit. You know, children and grandchildren, I think, and I, you know, I have three little granddaughters that live in San Antonio. I'm in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and I don't get to see them nearly enough, but I know that they learn a great deal by observing behaviors and attitudes and ethical practices of their parents. And then on those times when they're around me and my wife, you know, they're watching everything we do, right, you know, and they're like these little sponges that just soak it up. And so I think we have a responsibility to demonstrate, you know, honesty and kindness and resilience and responsibility and all those things I talk about in The Modern Gentleman.
And you're right, because as the cliche goes, and it's true, that our example will be louder, right? Shout louder than our words. And yes, that is often painfully true. I realize as there are moments where I try to give my son some guides, like, hey, why didn't you do this? If you did this thing, your life would be better. And then immediately it's like the voice of God in my head going, Brian, if you did the things I encouraged you in the word, there'd be less painful parts of your life if you it wouldn't hurt so bad if you followed this wisdom. And so, right. Yes, the example, working diligently to provide that example in all aspects of our life, right? In our faith, trying to live that out and trying to be good stewards of our finances. So there's something left, if you will, not just left over, but intentionally set aside. And probably that planning process, I think, applies to all those things, right? If we're looking to be very intentional of teaching character and ethics that will skip a generation, right? So intense that it's thoughtful of, here's how we're planning for future generations to make that a mindset. I guess that probably also goes back to how we honor our parents, right? Was it the first commandment with a promise, right? Honor our mother and father, which I think at times, that's why, because the Bible didn't command us to love them. Parents love we love our children, but the children are commanded to like honor our parents, probably because we get frustrated with our parents. Maybe that's why Jesus, or God in the Old Testament didn't command us to love them, but to honor them and show that respect. Maybe that goes both ways in teaching for those multiple generations. Is that off track?
I don't think it is. I guess we could get into a whole conversation of what is the responsibilities included within the broad topic of honoring. Well,
I do wonder about that one at times. Yes, maybe that's good for the next podcast. But in teaching that generation, right, how do we prepare them for the third generation and beyond? Also made me think of. And I'm stealing some of this from others, but building on what someone had said is not only just thinking about, am I working on my career and sort of mine and my wife's assets, but positioning things as family assets, so to speak, sort of a person referred to, think of Abraham in the Old Testament when his family worked in the family business, right? There were things that the children would inherit. We talk about farm and animals, but that was a business, right? The cattle, those different things represented wealth in the same way as if you had a ranch today with, 50,000 head of cattle, that would represent some wealth, and how the process is involving them in some way in the family's assets so that they're tied to the family business, if you will, whether that's we own rental homes or we have a company that does coding or whatever it may be. And it was just, it really made me think, I know I've thought more just the next generation as opposed to how can I think about creating something that's multi-generational, whether it's business or even how we approach trying to live out our faith in serving others, talking about how do we instill that in them, thinking very specifically, what does it take to build that into the kids so that it impacts my grandchildren, their children?
That's a great talking point, Brian. And, two things come to mind. One, I think I have an answer for you. But the other thing that I want to bring up is, it used to be that families, kind of all stayed in the same geographic area. Right. And now it's very common to be spread across the country. Certainly that's the case of my family. I live in one state. My parents and daughter and grandchildren live in another state, and at one time they lived in another country. My daughter and grandchildren and son-in-law lived in another country. So, they kids grow up and they move off and they go do their own things now. It used to be, if you had a family business, like something as simple as like a shoemaker or right. A candle maker, whatever it was. The children were apprenticed up throughout their years of growing, and they worked directly under a master craftsman,
right.
Who at some future point would turn that business over to them, and they in turn would become the master. And in a modern society, that's not I guess that could still happen, but it's certainly not typical.
It's not. I had without not in the context exactly of what we're talking about. I'd been around a family. One of the jobs I'd had a few years ago was sales manager for a supplement company, Himalaya Herbal Healthcare, And the it was a family-owned business. It started in India. It's now headquartered in Dubai. But I got to work with the grandson of the founder, who he is CEO of the Americas, and they're based in Sugar Land. And it was really interesting to hear him talk, because he would share that there were times growing up that he would be with the family at work, be with his grandfather in the office or his dad, and they would be on a phone call or doing something. And he just got the experience of listening to his grandfather and father handle business situations. So that an informal apprenticeship, if you would like, right? And to get to see that experience. And you're right, that is very uncommon. And I think, at least in modern Western culture, our individualistic attitude. And I will be transparent. Every time my pastor reminds me about our very individualistic Western ways, it really hurts a little. It's important that I think he does, right? But there's that part of me that's like, oh, that's a good thing. But then I realize, oh, there are all these aspects of when I have a very individualistic approach to things that I'm probably missing out on a lot of opportunity, things of this nature, right? Where we don't naturally think of, whether it's an apprenticeship, the children in the family business or any endeavor, but certainly kind of a family business. And where you're thinking, this takes time. In those moments where you're doing such a thing, or you mentioned a craft, right? If you were making candles or shoes, all the lessons that get taught in that working with your child or your grandchild in those situations, right? From how to do your craft well to, you mentioned ethics, right? How we handle a situation, right? From a supplier or a customer or a team member, right? Even if it's a small business, you might have two or three people, whether it's the candle example, which there are modern candle makers and shoemakers, or you're learning plumbing. A good friend who's now, grew up with us at church, Andrew Ross, goes by Drew. Drew has his own plumbing company, but he worked under another plumber, right, through that apprenticeship. It happens to be a pastor, Donnie Hustledge. And he learned, young, how to do this and do it well. And then Donnie's kids, well, they grew up with tools in their hands, right? So not only they go through that formal process, they had a very informal process, of learning the craft, and they ended up running their own businesses. And it's really interesting, the wisdom that second, well, they're really third generation, because Donnie's dad was a plumber. So that third generation has an enormous amount of wisdom, even at a very young age, right? Because they can be in the early stages of their official plumbing career, but because when they were 5 or 6, dad started taking them along, they learned decades of wisdom over just a handful of years, right? Got to experience a great deal. And so it does make me think, like, I need to be more intentional and to seek out what others who have done it well, what that should really look like. Now, again, we've got one child about to be out of the house, so it will have to even be more intentional on our part. I hope he doesn't go far away. And especially as his career takes off, like you mentioned, how to keep them close. I've at least said, well, I'm old enough now to understand, kids, that I want to be the type of dad that when you are older and get married, that you want to be close by, right? That there's a desire to be close. I probably not hit that mark. I'm working out. They might be trying to go to as far away as possible. But with that idea, right, be close. How can we'll talk about how can we have the family compound someday, right? Get enough acreage. You can put your house a little away from us, but I'd love you to be close. But again, look at ways to be far more intentional around that Proverbs 13:22. How do we impact that third generation?
Just a couple of anecdotes here. It's a cycle of life, because as a young man, all I wanted to do was get away.
Right. Me too.
And now as I'm entering, let's face it, I've probably got more behind me than I do ahead of me. Okay.
Me as well.
And I remember when Donnie's son, Chris, was a little boy. So I feel like I'm really getting old now. Now as someone who's at least in middle age, so we'll stop there. At least middle age, you start thinking about, it'd be cool to have a family compound and have everyone drawn together. But what I have found is that I'm a completely different kind of grandfather than I was father. Like, I'm the kind of grandfather that was like, Yeah, absolutely. You can have chocolate cake for breakfast.
Yeah.
Right. Have two slices. Why not? You know, because look at, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right? Absolutely. People will joke and say like, oh, I wish, you know, or I'm only nice to you because you gave me grandkids, or I wish I had the grandkids first. But I think the reality is, right, as we get through that stage in life and our children have kids, then we're able to reflect back like, oh, that thing I thought was so important probably wasn't, right? So now you're like, chocolate cake is going to be great for breakfast. It's going to be okay. Your life's not going to be ruined forever if this thing that once upon a time I thought was vital, we skip. Is that?
Yeah, because now they're going to remember, because they call me Pop, because I think I'm still, even though I think I'm old, I'm probably too young to, you know, be a grandfather with three grandkids. So they call me Pop. So they're like, Pop gives us cool stuff, you know?
Right.
And I think that's awesome. But, you know, you talked about intentionality, and I think one of the things that we should do on purpose is have intentional conversations.
Yes.
With the, you know, children, grandchildren, regular discussions that talk about values and ethical dilemmas and moral reasoning. And, you know, they can be conversations, I think, that could be prompted by just almost everyday situations or stories from your own life or books or history or current events. And I think it can help younger generation begin to think more critically about morality, and will help them begin to internalize the values that we hold dear.
I think that makes sense. You know, how have you had a chance to do that? Because I will tell you, one of the things I struggle with is my poor children don't want lectures. They probably trade a beating for versus the lecture. I haven't beaten them lately, but you know, like, so I realize that my delivery, my intentions may be good, but often my delivery is off. But you mentioned some stories and different things. Have you had a chance to try to do that? Because I need to get better at working that in a conversational way.
What I've got to realize is that I am still a work in progress too. You know, amen. When I was a father, I had never been a father before, and I made a lot of mistakes. And now I'm probably making a lot of mistakes as a grandfather, you know, because, you know, let's face it. I probably didn't have the best role models that I could have had either. I mean, when I was growing up, my dad was working two jobs. And he was a great provider, and I love him. He's still alive, and I'm thankful to God that I still have him. But he was working, or he was always on business trips. So, he was doing what he had to do at that moment in time to provide for his family. But I missed out on some of that other stuff,
right?
You know, and so a lot of this stuff I'm learning along the way. So. You know, I told my wife after I wrote this book, I said, you know, if I could be good at half of what I've written in here, I'd probably be a pretty decent guy. You know, writing it down is one thing, putting it into practice and action, that's where the rubber meets the road. And so to the extent, have I done it? Yeah. To the extent that I would like to have done it? No, not yet. Right. I'm still working on that, Brian.
Well, I appreciate it. I think we all, I think even those who do it well would sincerely say it could always be done better. And it is for those who grew up with their mom and dad at home and had a fairly sane, no one escapes without some dysfunction because we live in a fallen world, right? But if you grew up in a relatively healthy house, there are things that happen that you don't realize if you're either your parents or, you know, like your father's very busy or parents are divorced. There are just natural missings from, you know, you mentioned like car repair in the book. I didn't really see that a lot growing up because, you know, my dad wasn't there. Sometimes stepdad show me, sometimes not. Right. So there are a lot of little things that just happen that naturally take place if the home's intact, right, that are different than otherwise. And if our grandparents either weren't around as an example, or there was limited interaction, you're right, that model. And I think, you know, I think there are about a trillion ways to mess up something, right? There are only a few ways probably to do it right, but I have found infinite ways to fail as a father, as a husband at different times. You're like, oh, but yes, the model to do it well. I will say, interestingly enough, my grandfather, who was the illegitimate child of a man who had a whole nother family. So when my grandfather was somewhere around 13 or 14, someone told him, like, you know, you and your brother, you know, that guy that comes over to cut your hair on the weekends, that's your dad. He didn't know, right? So he didn't grow up with a normal, anything close to normal parenting, because his mother had passed away when he was 5. He was raised by his grandmother, who spoke little English because she was from Poland, and his aunts. And then, interesting enough, though, and he passed away just a couple years ago, when he had grandkids and great grandkids there they're from Independence, he would be there like all the time, after work, you know, come see the babies, hang out. My oldest cousin, she was saying how when she had her daughter, his great granddaughter, she would have said, "Grandpa, it's 9 o'clock. We're putting her to bed. You have to go home. Come back tomorrow." Like, he would be there when she got home from work and stay until bedtime. It's like, wow, that's a lot when the kid's an infant. I'm not suggesting we do that, but just thinking of examples, like, he was pretty committed, you know, in that engagement, even though that wasn't his example. So again, I know I've got a lot to learn, to try to pass on, but that intentionality of how do we model it, and then finding those who have done it well and getting them in the conversation. Cause I think sometimes those folks who may have had good role models and themselves may be good role models may not be aware of the void, if you will. Right. And how significant that lack can be for those of us where we're not where we want to be. And there's some uncertainty, right? Where you say, hey, here, I know I have these aspirational things. I know what's important to do, but then living it out and having someone sort of walk alongside you when you're doing it, right? To help course correct.
Well, certainly having mentors is good, but you know, one of the most important things that we need to realize is that even if you're sitting out there and you're saying, hey, Brian, hey, Patrick, you don't understand. I didn't even have a tenth of what you had.
Right.
Growing up. Well, you know, that's the situation and the reality for a lot of men out there. And that's part of, by the way, that's part of the reason I wrote The Modern Gentleman. But what we can always realize is that we have modeled to us the relationship that God has with us.
Right.
You know, as our father. You know, and that relationship. And if you think about it, we in life, even devout Christians who are seemingly doing everything right, face challenges, face adversity. Mm-hmm. And I think in a similar fashion, we should allow our children to face challenges and adversity and assign them responsibilities, to help develop their character. You know, even right. If it's a simple task, something that's age appropriate, gradually increasing in complexity, why do we do that? Well, one, we want them to fail within the confines and the safety of our loving arms, right?
That's good, yes.
Two, we want them to build self-confidence and self-reliance.
Right.
I don't want my kid or my grandkid, the first time they ever experience failure, I don't want it to be in the real world.
Right, right. Yes, that makes sense, right? The sounds like you're saying you're giving them opportunities to do difficult things, right, that stretch them. And yes, make those mistakes or those learning opportunities when you can guide them and reassure them and comfort them. I think that's a great, the analogy between us and the Lord and us and our kids is really important to remember, right? Even if we're doing things well, we are going to face times where we have to go back and say, Lord, I don't know what to do, right? Give me wisdom.
Well, in a practical sense, it's going to help with problem solving skills. And, you know, like the Bible says, we're strangers in a strange land. Nobody, you know, out there in the business world, you know, nobody is, quote, your friend.
Right.
You know, and you will face adversity and you will face failure and you're going to encounter things that are patently unfair, at, you know, just on their face, unfair, whether it's discriminatory because of this or that, or, right, you know, whatever it is, that's, you know, as they say, that's life.
Right.
And so, you know, if our kids and grandkids have that self-resilience to be able to deal with that type of adversity without it crushing them, then we've done our job.
Yeah, that's great.
I think there's a lot of ways we can do that, but, you know, whether it's through religious training, spiritual or philosophical teaching, you started off this conversation talking about how those of the Jewish faith seem to have this paradigm where family beliefs and values and things like that seem to be much more important than they are in a strictly Western or, you know, neo-American culture.
Right.
But why can't we change that, at least on a micro level, right, with our own family?
No, you know, absolutely. You know, I think we can learn a lot from those who are doing it better than us or different. And yes, striving to be more intentional, have those conversations, like you said, and put them in difficult situations, things that give them a chance to fail and push, test their limits. Recently, we've done a little bit of that at the house where, when I was a teenager, I liked to lift weights because I had this vision that I was going to be 220 pounds and 5% body fat. And since I'm about 4 foot tall, I'd been wider than I am tall in a good way. And now at 49, I'm like, I need to lift weights because I need to be able to pick up my keys if they fall, or I need to do the most important squat movement ever. And that's, I need to be able to go to the restroom by myself when I'm 70. Right. And right. So start like, okay, I don't enjoy it like I used to. I'm like, okay, I have to do this. And then Brendan's been working out with me. Addie's done it a few times and my wife started doing it, but, you know, going through a training program to get progressively stronger, right? You hit those parts where, okay, this is not working today, or I'm tired, or you go out and do it, even when you don't want to, or you try to, and then learning that, oh, I can fail at this. Okay, life's not over. Right? There's a spot, there's a safety. And trying those difficult things together, that's one little way we've been trying to do that, right? Like, hey, here's the reason we're doing this. Here's a chance to push our limits and fail, but fail in a safe way. So that's been one way. We are working on the financial piece as well, right? Trying to steward our finances well, to leave, you know, and teach our kids to be good with their finances, to be thoughtful, to hopefully leave them something. But I do know that moving forward, I'm going to put additional effort into thinking, how can I be far more intentional about impacting that third generation, the grandkids and beyond, and then looking for ways to appropriately model and teach that to our kids so that they do the same, right? That we keep thinking a couple of generations down the road. And maybe someday they'll have the family compound.
Well, you know, just from a very practical and pragmatic viewpoint, I would say this. You know, as I've gotten older, one of the things that I've become keenly interested in is genealogy.
Oh, yeah.
And in my research, I discovered that my family, the Bass family, is Native American.
Interesting.
Going all the way back to the 1600s, wow, when the Bass family came over from England and then married into the Nansemond Indian tribe. And I never knew that. And to this day, the Bass family and the Nansemond Indian tribe, it's synonymous. It's primarily a family tribe. Pardon me. And over the years, I've become increasingly reconnected with that part of my identity. And you know, I've gotten involved and I'm actually a vice chief of our tribe now.
Oh, wow.
And one of the cool things that I've been able to pass on to my daughter and my grandchildren is this legacy of, this is, you know, this is our family all the way back to early 1600s. And so, you know, that's something amazing that I can pass on to them as part of our legacy.
Right.
But what I would say is, you know, had I never done that, and my grandfather is the one that started this journey, and he'd hit a roadblock in research.
Okay.
that I was able to crack after years of just going through records. One key piece of information that unlocked this entire new reality for us. Make sure you write this stuff down, because once you're gone, mm-hmm. that information may vanish with you.
Makes sense.
So that's one thing in a very practical sense that you could provide as a legacy to your children. The stories that you remember now about your father and mm-hmm. your grandfather and your great-grandfather. You know, for my great-grandchildren, the concept of my great-grandfather, who was in the late 1800s, right. That's like a million miles away from
right, home. Yeah.
But, you know, I was that one connection where I was actually still alive when they were alive, and now I'm alive where my grandchildren are right. alive. So they still have that direct connection back at least two generations.
Very cool.
So capture all of that stuff. Write right. it down, man, because when we're gone, you don't want that to – that's part of our legacy that we're leaving behind. I think
that's great wisdom. And it reminds me, when you think about this, I think writing it down so it's documented that way. And then I think it was Patrick Bed David said, everybody should have a podcast. He goes, here's why. So your grandchildren can know what you think. So it sounds like, too, it might be a good idea, along with writing it down so we don't delete it, but, you know, written down, saved, but maybe also a video, right, to capture your image, your voice telling your yet unborn great-grandchildren about the family, right? We have all this technology. We can do it in multiple ways, right? Have it well documented. And yet you're right. I hadn't thought about it that way. Your connection to your grandparents and your grandkids' connection, to be able to look back to the late 1800s, it's really interesting to think about that, right?
You know, a long time ago, and I wish I could remember who I heard this from so I could give them attribution. I heard a preacher say something to the effect of, and I mentioned this in my book, every week, work on something that is going to outlive you.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And whether that's, like you said, a book or a podcast or a writing or something, you know, there's all kinds of cool technology now where you can sign up and they'll send you a question a day every day, and you write an answer, and then at the end of a year, they send you your book.
Okay, yeah.
You know, even if it's something right. like that, I have my grandmother's, she kept just in a, you know, a three ring kind of a binder sort of thing, spiral binder. She wrote two or three sentences every day, dated it, you know.
That's beautiful.
And I have several of those journals, and I very frequently look back in those now and see what her day was like on a given day.
It has to be great.
Nothing profound. Right. You know, I went to town and ate at McDonald's, and then I went to the grocery store. But to have that connection, to see what she did on that day right. at that year, it means so much to me.
I
treasure those journals as one of my most precious possessions.
That's cool. Well, there's wealth in that, right? Although it's not monetary, but there's an inheritance that's been passed down, if you will, right, that you will be able to share with your grandchildren. So one additional way to keep that legacy going, and hopefully we all get a little better at it, be examples to others, have others, wherever there'll be a place for comments here from the podcast or the video people see, and probably share ways that they're doing it or intend to do it, and we can collectively help each other be a little better at this, to leave that inheritance for our grandchildren, our children's children, financial, and as you said, most importantly, that ethical character inheritance that will help them fight the battles they'll have to fight, right? Because each generation will have to relearn and instill those values in their children.
Yeah, I agree, Brian. And you know, what a great conversation, and what a refreshing way to look at Proverbs 13:22, and to think about it in something in terms of more than just financial wealth, which I think is something that we should be able to help with. But I think the broader application that we've talked about today is something that is more valuable than gold.
Awesome. Thank you. I look forward to our next conversation. And next week, Brahm may be back if they return him from wherever they've taken him from. So this is Brahm's show. Thank you. And we hope that you come back again.